The Real Vision Daily Briefing, Ed Harrison here for Real Vision. I am talking today to Tom Thornton, who is the founder of Hedge Fund Telemetry. Tom, welcome back.
Ed, how are you? Nice to see you.
I'm good, and it's good to talk to you. As I was saying before, you know, Ash is the one who's been talking to you the most. He stole you from me, so I'm glad we have the chance to have you on Thursdays when I'm here. I want to give you a chance to talk about your company, Hedge Fund Telemetry. I know that RV subs can get a special deal. Maybe first of all, tell us what Hedge Fund Telemetry is all about, and then tell us about the deal, this discount code that people can get for your company.
Okay, I'll make it real brief. I put out a daily newsletter, sometimes two notes a day, and I have based the stuff I put out off of the information that I put out when I had and worked at a hedge fund. So I look at market sentiment, I look at technicals, it's macro top down. I look at equities, bonds, currencies, commodities, crypto, a lot of different things, and try to have a little bit of a contrarian bent to it. So we do have a discount off the full year rate. It's $250 off the $750 normal year rate if you use the code STONKS, okay? And we're redoing our site, so it's kind of garbage right now. So it's going to look great. So I've been super busy with that. So anyway,
yeah, I'm guessing that the STONKS code is a completely ironic thought, because you're not a STONKS kind of guy.
That's true. I'm not. I'm not.
Well, you know, speaking of not being a stocks kind of guy and being a macro guy, let me tell you how I'm thinking about things. And let's start the conversation off there. You know, the United States has gotten forward with this whole vaccination process to the point now where we're reopening. We're reopening so fast that people are saying, wait a minute, stop paying these people unemployment. Get them out there into the economy. So, you know, we're getting 6% Q2 GDP growth. We had 6% in Q1. Things are moving forward in a great way. The problem, however, is that people think that inflation is hotting up. And so that's really causing a lot of turbulence. I think the VIX has gone up in particular because the bleed from inflation goes from inflation bleed to bonds and then into stocks. That's how I'm kind of thinking about it. Where are you on that?
Well, there are two camps. There's the Fed that says everything is transitory. And then there's the others that say you're going to have permanent inflation. Things are going to stay elevated and high. I'm actually in the middle of that, because I do think that there are transitory inflation spikes. And on the CPI, we saw that used cars were up 10%. Rental cars were up a lot. Travel, hotels, airlines, things like that are transitory, because they're not going to be able to keep that pricing power at those high levels. And this is more of a contrarian bent, we've seen corn, soybeans, wheat, a lot of the soft agricultural stuff has really moved up quickly. Seasonality tends to see a peak in those in June. And it's almost like the easiest trade in the world. You buy them and then the seasonality comes and you sell them. So I just recently shorted corn, soybeans, and wheat. I think copper still has a potential for a little bit further. You still have some of the others out there. I'm not a gold bug. I'm really agnostic mm-hmm. with gold, and I don't have a position right now, but it doesn't move with this inflation that's happening. And maybe that's a circumstance because people are finding other places like Bitcoin and other areas to hedge themselves for inflation. So there will be, however, some permanent inflation that's going to happen. And I believe that will come mostly with wages. And, you know, maybe the government has this, you know, secret plan that they're saying, okay, we're going to pay people, we're going to compete with the employers out there, and they're going to have to raise wages to because actually you can't really force wages to be raised. There has to be some sort of competition. So you're seeing McDonald's, you're seeing Chipotle, you're seeing all Amazon, all of the, you know, and it's across the board, even and especially with small businesses, wages are going up. You can't get people to work because of, you know, there's competition out there and good competition. So the government is, you know, they were all surprised that the jobs number last month wasn't, or this last month wasn't so great. I think it definitely was some competition with the government stimulus programs, but that's going to stay higher. You're not going to see wages go down after this. That's going to stay high. I also think that the inflation risks are really, you're going to see it with higher rates. And we've taken a pause here. And I believe when the next jobs number comes out, and that will be June 4th, the survey for the unemployment number and the non-farm payroll was done yesterday. Today's claims number was another downtick. It's still extremely elevated at 400 plus, almost 500,000 people with initial claims. But that's going to start trending down. And, you know, you also have a lot of stuff that's really good where, you know, they're talking about getting rid of masks in the U.S. In certain places, in crowded places, airlines and buses, and you wear your mask. But that's a really big positive. And the vaccine rollout in the U.S. has been really, really good. And so that's going to be, you know, this big push. And I think within the next quarter, maybe it'll peak around August, we're going to get back to a normalization. And that normalization is going to be rather boring. I also think that it's going to be boring because it's okay, we're here. What's the next catalyst that's going to spur things on? But I also think in June, the Fed will mention that they're thinking about changing policy. And, you know, Stan Druckenmiller's piece in the Journal, it's a required reading because as a bond person, Stan is a bond vigilante. And he thinks that what's happening right now with the Fed is just egregious. And his belief, and I agree, you know, I thought the Fed should have started to mention tapering, especially when the fiscal policies and stimulus is just there. We've never seen, you know, trillions of dollars from the government just being thrown out there like free money for everybody. And so I think the Fed, like Stan said, should be a buffer and they should start to normalize their policy. Everybody's probably going, well, Tom, that never will happen because the Fed can't do that because they're boxed in. Yeah, you're probably right. So what's going to happen with inflation when we get over the hill? Because I think there's going to be another side that comes down. And then you have the group that's talking about deflation. I'm not going to go further in that because we'll do that over the next few months. But the fact is, inflation is here. We're paying more for everything. Everybody notices it. You also had this, you know, the fuel pipeline.
Right. Hack. Yes.
So that threw another wrench into, you know, the higher prices. The other thing is, as these things go up, it's like a tax on the consumer. So the consumer is going to spend less on certain things. It's also going to hurt restaurants and food service industries because they're going to have to pay. Their input costs are going to go up. And they just better hope that the crowds come and are willing to pay a little bit more for dinners. And, you know, it's hard. It's real hard to go out and pay for a family to go out to dinner, you know, really anywhere in the country right now.
Hi, everybody. I'm Katie Segal.
And I'm Kurt Sutter.
And welcome to our new podcast called Pie: People, Influences, and Experiences.
Yes, it's sort of the get to know you at a deeper level, the who, what, when, where, and why you are, rather than what it is you do.
Absolutely. We're not going to talk too much about what people do. We just want to know about their families, where they come from, you know, what shapes their parenting if they have kids, what shapes their marriages if they're married. We just want to be really nosy. We want to get in there.
A deep dive into nature and nurture.
And we started it because there are a lot of people that we don't know that we are curious about.
Right. And I have no friends. So for me, it's, you know.
Trying to get them out of the house.
Listen to it on whatever you listen to. Podcasts on?
Yeah, podcasts, homecasts.
Your podcasting apparatus? Watch it on the YouTube.
He's aging himself.
Well, you know, let's put some specificity on this, looking at the markets from today. Let me give you the indices. We got the Dow Jones at up 425 points, 1.27%. S&P was up 1.14%, 46 points. NASDAQ was up a little bit less, 0.78%, 101.95. So the interesting bit for me there is, okay, we have the VIX still at 23, and we had bonds getting up to 169 yesterday. It seems like a lot of that was a give back today. So everything that we're talking about, you and me right now, in terms of the bond vigilantes getting in there, is not what we saw in the markets today. What's going on in terms of those three indices? And I'm thinking specifically about triple Qs versus spiders, SPX.
Well, I think today was a short-term oversold bounce. And I think the bounce will be a lower high bounce. And we'll probably see, I mean, my target on the S&P is 39.50. That's my first target. And it's not that bad. Everybody will be fine. If it gets worse than that, you know, we'll cross that bridge when we get there. But I think that is the place I'm watching. Now, one thing that's really interesting and not a lot of people are talking about is that the triple Qs, the NASDAQ 100 versus the spiders, the S&P 500, has made a relative low of 11 months. It's almost 12 months. I think it's June 16th. We're at the same level of last year. And that's really remarkable, especially, and what I'll tell you was great is that we used to have just the FANG and mega cap stocks doing all the heavy lifting, and they've just been terrible all year, the year to date. I mean, even Apple's down on the year. Amazon, you know, had great numbers and sold off. I mean, I shorted Amazon on the bounce after hours, and people were like, good luck. And it's just like, it was easy money to short it. And I'm out of it. It was just a small position, so it worked. But I think that you have this big rotation happening, and it's continuing, where you do have the value names, you know, financials, energy, real estate, healthcare have been doing really, really well. Industrials have been great. And then tech is just sort of meandering. And look, semiconductors have been hit really hard. And they have like the biggest semiconductor shortage, which should be moving prices higher. And I think that's just become very baked in. And I still think semis can go a little bit lower, because guess what's going to happen? That semi shortage is going to open up and not be such a big shortage. And it's not like the stocks are going to go up because of the opening of more semi supply. They're going to go lower. So I think that semis have made maybe a very big top. Okay, fine. That they could see some bounces here and there. But I do think that this is a big top. They've just been incredibly strong for years. And they really didn't get a huge correction. And semis go in cycles. So that's another thing that could be when we start to normalize, that's on the other side of the hill that could happen. Further in the market.
What happens when you look at DeMarc indicators on that? Like, what are you seeing, especially on the triple Qs versus spiders, and also with regard to semiconductors?
Okay, the triple Qs, they've actually made a lower high and very pronounced one. And that, to me, is saying that we should work lower. But the more, and I didn't really get a great DeMarc countdown, sell countdown in the triple Qs, but I did get one in the S&P futures at the exact high just a few days ago. And when I was on last, I said, you know, look, we're getting a weekly and we still have a daily that we could move a little higher. And it really, I mean, it was right on the day and boom, it went down. You know, I'm not going to say that the DeMarc indicators work every single time because we've had such strong trends. We'll, you know, we'll have a DeMarc 13 and it goes down by 2% and then, you know, down 3 days and onward, it goes right back. But what's happening that's really unique right now, I track how many DeMarc cell countdown 13s there are in the market every day. And I look at the daily and weekly. Daily are shorter term. The weekly are more concerning because they're more intermediate in term. We've had humongous numbers of daily and weekly happening. And I'm talking also about a lot of ETFs that we have these intermediate term sell signals. So to me, when I see both of these, I'm a power numbers person. When I see these things happening together, it gives me a little bit more confidence that, hey, we're going to see a reversal. On the other hand, when I, in December of 2018 and last March, the low in 2020, I had the opposites and I had buy signals on daily and weekly. And I had people, I was saying, you just got to get out there and buy every single thing you possibly can. And I had people questioning. They're like, is your judgment okay? And I said, yeah, I'm fine. I'm just following what I've studied for 20 years. So it really, it worked. And also, we're right now in a place where market sentiment is starting to wane. And we're right on some of the polls I have, they're right in the middle. So it's either a make or break situation right now. And usually it's like when you get to that middle point, 50%, you sometimes get a bounce like what we just had today. And then a lower high and then boom, we go lower. So my view right now in the equity markets is we're probably going to get a lower high bounce and then we're going to get some sort of, you know, another pullback. And I think that 3950 is my S&P initial target. And I think we can get there. And, you know, I think the market bulls need that right now because they're complacent and they need to see some rotation and find ideas that perhaps better entry points. Because I know a lot of people that they're asking me, what do I buy long? There's really not good entry points right now. And that's, I think most bulls will fully agree with that.
That is interesting. Yeah. So, I mean, basically, you're talking about the need for rotation, the need for a pause, getting down to that 3950 level. You don't have any, it sounds like, conviction longs as a result of that. But what about shorts, both individual shares and stylistic or sector thinking? Because, you know, before we came on, you were talking about some of the companies that you were looking at.
Right. Well, last time I was on, I talked about energy. I was long energy. I took some profits in energy. I also was long some Chinese internet stocks. They have not worked. The Chinese government has really thrown a wrench into my bullish bounce thesis by just, you know, clamping down more on the large KWEB, the ETF stocks. I mean, it's just been horrible. So I'm out of those, took a loss, move on, not huge positions. I do want to re-enter energy. I think that there's still great value there. They pulled back after the pipeline opened and they're a little overbought. I do think commodities are a little high. So maybe we'll see some pullback in the 50s on crude, hopefully. I am short Disney, which I see is down almost 4% after hours. I was so nervous about this one because I knew that there was really high expectations. I know their streaming service is doing well, but they missed on streaming. So it's working for me. I'm also long Coinbase. Mm. I talked about it before it went public. I said I was going to buy a small position and just starter size on the day of the offering. I did. And it went down. I bought more recently in the 200s. And now it's not doing great because crypto's not doing great. I haven't looked at their numbers yet. And we'll see if I'm going to, you know, add to it or when I'm going to add to it. My view is that Coinbase is such a hairy stock. The shorts, it's like short bait. It's like chum. It's like, oh, this is so overvalued. It's like the guy in Jaws, you know, he's pouring out the chum and the shark comes up and it's like, that's what the shorts are doing right now. They're going to short the daylights out of this thing. So I'm going to hopefully get a short squeeze in this thing. I'm actually short the Bitcoin Grayscale ETF or whatever that is. And so that's working for me. So I'm a little hedged. So I'm short semiconductors. What else am I short?
Well, so Tommy, let me ask you this then. This is a follow on. So a lot of this is, I'm thinking about tech when you say that. I'm looking at a screen of tech for today. You go through GoPro up, Facebook up, Apple up, Amazon up, Netflix up, Alphabet up, Verizon, Cisco, Intel, they're all up, right? The one that's down the most in my screen is Tesla. Tesla is down 3% today when almost the entirety of the technology sector is up. What's going on there?
Well, not everything is up. I'm short Adobe was up a little. I'm looking also, a lot of things were under the VWAP levels at the end of the day. So there was some selling there. So Tesla, I wrote about it today, and I think that I think the cult of Elon is starting to really fade, because you have on two sides, you have the people that just Elon can do no wrong. I mean, he could basically sell flamethrowers. Could you imagine flamethrowers that could cause like people to burn themselves or burn their house down? Oh wait, he did do that. They will do anything that he says, buying a joke meme crypto. Yeah, let's take it up to $90 billion. So he's also put his, you know, he's starting to like crack those people by coming out today and saying, or yesterday saying, that they're not going to accept Bitcoin for Teslas. I doubt there was ever a Tesla sold or, you know, bought for with Bitcoin. But, it started to, you know, break up a little bit. There were so many people on Twitter that were just, you know, using the F word against Elon, and they're upset about it, and they don't want his crypto enthusiasm to wane. And I get it. I understand. But I also think that Tesla has a lot of competition that's coming online right now. The Ford Mach-E is getting great reviews. It's not rolling out as fast as they would like, obviously. But Audi has several new models. And, you know, they look like Audis. They perform like Audis. Yeah. They're not like this, you know, high tech type of stuff that has to be too inventive. They just work, and they're just good cars that are electrified. The Porsche Taycan is absolutely fabulous. You have the Turbo S, which is always the dumbest name that they I don't know why they did that, but because there's no turbos.
And, you know, by the way, we're speaking to a guy who's in the EV sector at Volkswagen, the guy who's the head there. So that'll be interesting.
Yeah. You know, the Volkswagen group, which includes, you know, so many, you know, Audi, Porsche, they have so many different brands. They're making a monstrous push on with EVs. And they're really, you know, it's really a Europe focused situation right now. They're scattering them in Europe. They are building a factory, another factory in China, and that's going to come online probably in a year. And then in the U.S. And Volkswagen really hasn't had a presence in the U.S. But I think this could be the ID.3 and the ID.4. I think those could be viable candidates for people that want EVs, and they're also pricing them right. And again, I think the technology that are in Teslas may be a little too advanced for what people need. The full self-driving, well, that's, you know, level 2, not level 5. And I think that's a problem that Elon has, because if all of a sudden the people that paid $10,000 for this, and he's saying, well, on their filing, they said, well, this may or may not actually happen. They're not guaranteeing it. That could be a problem if people start to say, hey, I want my money back because it's not here. I don't have a robo taxi or some of these things. And I just think people want good cars that work. They're electrified. They feel good about it. You go to work, go to drive around, whatever. That's all they want. They don't need 0 to 60 in 2 seconds. There's nobody, a Formula One driver does not, they can't handle those G's for a long period of time. And actually under 2 seconds is faster than a Formula One car starting off like a 0 to 60. So you don't need that.
Let me interrupt you for a second there, because there are two things. One is, as you mentioned, Formula One, and I know for a fact that you're thinking about that from the reopening. So let's reserve that and think about that. But the second is that when you're talking about Tesla and you're talking about peak Tesla, peak Elon Musk, I'm thinking about stonks. You know, that's your discount code that you had in the beginning. And you, before you came on, you were talking to me about a term called alpha seeking nomads. I want to talk about, you know, what Tesla represents from that perspective in terms of this rotation that you're talking about, this triple Q versus SPY at a 11-month low, and peak Elon. It seems like, you know, when you look at Tesla, you look at ARK Invest, there is a storm that's brewing.
Right. Well, what we've seen over the last year, we have a lot of new investors or traders in the market, and they've just, you know, gone from one stock to another looking for this big bang to make them rich. And they're not holding these for long. They're day trading them, and that's all fine. But what's going to happen is you have this rotation where you have these people that go into something, and then there's a new thing. It stops going up, and then there's a new thing, and they'll go to that, and that'll stop going up, and then that'll just languish, and then they move to the next one. They did that last year, notably with Tesla, with ARK. And I'm not going to get into the Bill Wang Archegos connection with Kathy Wood. That's a whole nother. We go out and have drinks with that one. But the point is that people are now underwater significantly in ARK Investments ETFs. And they're in the worst case scenario because they have illiquid stocks where they have a 10% or more position of their market cap. And that I know people that are targeting those names on the short side. I'm short ARK. I've got a great, 30% gain in it. But the point is that people are going to get tired of being in something that's not working. And they just they seek another opportunity. That's why some of the cryptos were going crazy and, that had no basis for going up like they did. So I think that right now people are starting to get tired of tech stocks. They're not going up and they're looking for new opportunities. And you'll see it. You'll see it just rotating. They rotated back to AMC and GME today. And, like old favorites, and let's run those up. But it's not that easy now, and it's going to get harder to really move stocks because they've tried all of them, some of the meme stocks. But Tesla right now, it almost closed at a low. I think the low is like 535, and it closed at like 570. But if that starts to break down a little further, and I absolutely believe it will, it makes no sense, the valuation and the all the things that I've mentioned. It makes no sense, and I think it could be rather dramatic. And that's going to hurt ARK. That's going to hurt because ARK's holding on to the big some of the most illiquid names and trading in and out of the Apples and Amazons and others that are very liquid. And that's a bad thing. If you're holding stuff that's not working, that's illiquid, and right. you're trying to just manage your redemptions with large cap, it's just you're gonna wake up one day where you can't do that anymore.
Have you ever experienced turbulence on a flight and wondered why?
And you can see all the terrain around you. You've got no issue with visibility or anything?
No, everything's peachy.
Maybe you've sat on the tarmac for hours wondering why your plane isn't moving.
Well, we're outside here. They're saying the ramp is closed. They won't let us park because of Air Force One.
Listen in on the conversations between pilots and air traffic controllers on the Air Traffic Out of Control podcast.
513 Whiskey declaring an emergency. There's smoke in the cabin. I need to make a landing right now on 31 left.
We have the most interesting, wild, and funny ATC recordings you will ever hear. Check out Air Traffic Out of Control wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
Yeah, so it does seem like this is an interesting point in terms of where we are. I mean, not just in terms of spiders. You were talking about 3950, but there are other things that are going on behind the scenes. But what about on the long side? I just want to go back to that for a second, because we did say that, you know, you were talking about this rotation. There's nothing that you had huge conviction for. We are doing the reopening. I know that before we came on, you talked to me about Formula One. Interesting that you mentioned that when you were talking about Tesla. Talk to me about that. What can you do there and why?
Okay, well, as my friends know, I'm a huge Formula One fan. I've followed it for years, been to the races. And you have this giant global market. And I think it was like, it's about a billion and a half people watched Formula One they watch it every year. Now, what's happened is that with the COVID shutdowns, people haven't been able to go to the races. People have been watching on TV, and the viewership's very, very loyal and steady. And Formula One is a traded stock. The symbol is FWONK, Formula One, and it's owned by Liberty Media. Liberty Media is the John Malone conglomerate, and they brought in a guy who I've met in the past, Chase Carey, and he ran, you know, a lot of things for Fox, for News Corp, and he was also the CEO of DirecTV, but he's a marketing guy. And he took a very difficult business with, you know, you've got Ferrari and McLaren and all these big companies that have all these interests in for themselves. He brought them all together and changed the rules. And the rules are going to be more equal and cost savings. So the racing is not going to be just two teams battling it out or one guy winning every race. It's going to be more equal. It's going to be more like a NASCAR, where you're going to have teams that anybody can win on a weekend. And there's 20, they're increasing the number of races to 22. It's a lot of races. Now, when the reopening happens, and it's happening now, fans are going to be able to come back to the stands. And for example, there are like 400,000 people went to the British Grand Prix over the weekend in 2019. It's a lot of people, and the prices for tickets are very, very high. So you have this, they've actually managed their business really well, cut costs, done a lot of things, and now you're going to have the fans coming back to the races, and they're super loyal, very, very loyal, and they're going to be just dying to get out there and be there. And it's a really exciting thing. And one other thing that's going to be big next year, they're going to have a race, two US Grand Prix. One is in Austin, which I've been to, and it's a blast. And they're going to have one in Miami, which it will be, I mean, this thing's going to be unbelievable. So the other thing that's really interesting is in the US, they had the Formula One authorized or paid for a Netflix show to be produced called Drive to Survive. They started this 3 years ago. And If I tell you that, like, I have three daughters, and all of my daughters have, they're, you know, older, they've all watched it, and they're all obsessed.
Oh,
with
yeah.
Their boyfriends and husbands, and they're all like, oh, we gotta go, this is so cool. And so they made this like drama type show, and they spliced it great, and it's really taken over. So you have this huge, this catalyst of huge new viewers that are coming into and watching the sport. So I think as the stock's down 11% off its recent high, the races have just started. They're very exciting. And I think the stock over the long term, short term and long term, I think it's going to do really, really well. And again, it's a Liberty Media type of thing. And John Malone and his people are some of my favorites to invest with.
And do you have any price targets for it at all?
It's something like, where is it? It's 43-ish right now, 42-ish. I think it could be at 48. I know that may not seem, you know, like a big deal, but it adds up. And I think that could be, it could be there within the next couple months as more races happen. And I do think it'll be a stock that could double over the next year to 2 years. And so I like this as sort of like, just put it away. You could trade it around a little bit. It's not super liquid, but put it away. It's a great reopening and like reemerging type sport that a lot of people are going to be watching. And it's sort of like they're going after the NASCAR type of fan frenzy, television viewing, personalities within the sport. So I think it's, you know, Instagram's a big thing with them, and all the drivers are on there, and it's you're a lot closer to what's happening. And I think that will be a big deal.
Yeah. So, you know, let me sum up with a lot of the stuff that you're saying. I'm going to leave out the Formula One stock. I mean, this is this is what I'm getting, the macro view that you're talking about. We're looking at a market that has been, to a large degree, rotation oriented, with, you know, alpha seeking nomads getting in there in a way that has bid up, in particular, tech stocks. And now we're at a juncture where SP, you know, the spiders, ARK Invest, Tesla, there's some weakness there. And more so than anything else, you see opportunities from the short side. Over the near term, you have a 39.50 target on SPX, and you're just waiting to see what happens over the medium term to decide, you know, what the next vehicle is once the reopening gets going. Is that a fair assessment of where you are right now?
Yeah, and you know, another thing is there's a lot of stuff that are traditional reopening stocks, and they've already peaked. So they ran up well in advance of, you know, in anticipation of the virus getting in more arms and the reopening, because the reopening is really happening. And you're seeing even, you know, California's lifting some of the restrictions, and they've been really tight on things. I was in Dallas recently and COVID didn't exist, basically. And I've heard the same thing in Florida. Here in Connecticut, people are sort of mixed, and I think they're excited to get out just like everybody is. But yeah, I think that maybe we got a little ahead of ourselves with some of the reopening stuff. I mean, some airlines were much higher than they were previously before COVID, and you know, some like TripAdvisor was up 50% from the pre-COVID. And so those are things that I've been keeping an eye on.
Excellent, Tom. As always, it's a pleasure to talk to you. And I like the Formula One tout. I'm going to check that out.
All right. Well, Ed, thanks for having me.